Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We're streaming live on YouTube as well at the Team 980. And coming up at 5:30, we go around the NFL. Wild, wild day of NFL action. Started very early in the morning in London. It finished very late at night in Pittsburgh. We'll run through all of the games at 5:30. But right now, it is time for Not My Beat.
Today's top story, from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
It's just in.
Not My Beat.
Except Michael Phillips wasn't there. Were you Michael?
No,
were
sir.
You Michael?
No, sir. Not at all. I'll be there this Sunday, though. Wouldn't miss that one.
Yeah, I would. I missed the credential deadline, and it's just generally easier to not have to drive to and from Baltimore. So I'm gonna watch that one from home. But you,
we'll trade out
for a home game after one. This is only the second home game this year. You abandoned me, not for anybody. You abandoned me for Linnell.
This is wild because, as you see, I live in Richmond, and so on game days, I commute up to D.C. It's not a pleasant commute, but I do it because I love football and I love my job. I still commuted all the way to D.C. I just didn't actually go to the football stadium, so it was a little weird.
Yeah, people did get to hear your opinions during the game yesterday and during the pregame show. We had great fun with Linnell. In fact, Anthony, that actually reminds me. There was a couple of funny moments. I joined Michael and Linnell on the pregame show, and Linnell made a couple of bad analogies. Michael had some reference to something happening in England, and I made a couple of good jokes, and I think that we should review those later in the show.
Say no more.
All right. So that now that that's been marked, you can just pull that from yesterday. You might have to go in the 106.7. I don't know if we were still on 980 at that point. The point is, Michael, you did get to watch the game in studio. You were on the Linnell roller coaster ride. So as you started the show today, though, what's the big takeaway for you yesterday on another day, second in a row, where there's plenty of good things to say on both sides of the ball?
Craig, I am ready to get hurt again. I'm in. I'm all in with these guys. I'm ready. And I think this is for real. And you know, the last two we've had, right, the two graphics they keep showing, Lamar has, you know, not Lamar, I'm already onto this weekend. Jaden has the best number since RG3. The team has its best record since Jim Zorn. And gosh, both of those ended as flaming disasters. I believe this one is different. I really do. And I believe this one's more sustainable. I love that Jaden learned and grew as the game went on. I love that he didn't take big hits. I loved everything about this scheme. I love the way the defense came to play. Call me crazy. I'm ready to get hurt again. I think this one's for real.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you. And I don't know whether that – like, will there be some pain at some point this year? Yes, absolutely.
Oh, yes, of course.
Right, like, they're not going to run the table and score 30 every week and give up in the teens. Like, that is a pipe dream. But long-term, are they on the right path? Like, I don't even know what other – I mean, unless Peters just botches the next two draft classes or something, like, they are on such a good path. And I think the thing that I am really starting to appreciate as he gets better and better week over week is just how much cushion Jaden puts underneath the entire football team with what he's able to do week to week.
And look, Deshaun Watson was so bad. We could talk about that if you want to. They're so screwed. But that defense is legitimately good, Craig. And that defense came out with a plan to bother him, to get to him, sacked him on the first drive, intercepted him in the first quarter. It was working. He goes back to the sideline. He processes it. He comes back and says, okay, I can beat this. And he could. He did beat it, right? Like, that's not a rookie. That is veteran-level stuff right there. To see what they're throwing at you, see what's working, a span of like 30 actual minutes, not football minutes.
Right. He just figured it out. And like, I actually wrote down in my notes, I was like, the first, they were actually up 7-0, I think, 7-3, 7-0 at the end of the first quarter, or into the second when this drive happens, because they had gotten the 4th-and-1 stop. They score on a short field, but I don't feel like he had actually figured it out yet. And then he misses Terry deep, and then he misses Zach deep out of the shadow of his own end zone. And it's like, yeah, he missed him, but those were the right throws, and those were good play calls, and that was wide open. And I was like, the Browns are in trouble, trouble, trouble. And sure enough, they cooked them in the second quarter. But also the other thing, Michael, I think when you start to watch it back that you realize, I don't know if this is something you could appreciate watching it on TV in real time, is there's just certain things he can do that you can't, like, you can't have that in the playbook with other guys. Like, you can't just naked boot and be like, we'll leave Za'Darius Smith unblocked. That's fine. Our quarterback will roll out and find a guy in a tight window and just zing one into Terry McLaurin, and we don't have to worry about blocking the defensive end. So there's just stuff they can do with him, and then the running ability that just saves drives, that puts such a cushion and floor underneath you that you are able to, it kind of gives you the time to figure everything else out.
Yeah, that's a very great way to put it there. He makes the rest of the team, gives the rest of the team a margin for error. He gives the rest of the team the ability to adapt, to adjust whatever it is they need to do in that moment. And that's huge, right? That's how you put yourself in position to win football games. And they didn't need a late drive in this one, but when they needed a late drive, he's been clutch, right? If you're the defense, even if you're down 7 late, you say, all right, get this stop. He's going to get it figured out. We're going to win the football game on the other way. That's what you need going into a game against a team like Baltimore, right? I do expect Baltimore's going to score a lot of points this week. You need that cushion. We say, okay, we can make a mistake here. Number 5 is going to make up for it for us. Like, how huge is that? And then you mentioned, you know, being at the stadium. I'd love to get your thoughts on what it meant to have a largely pro Commanders crowd, not a lot of visiting fans, have everybody leave with a good experience. I think those are the things that really define franchises and fan bases and help you create what you're trying to create here in a very big picture sense.
So I will answer your question on some level with a question here, because you're the perfect person to have this exchange with. Michael, when you leave the press box after a Commanders game, as we head down to the locker room, what does that sound like?
Yeah, you walk it. You're in the concourse, and
right. You're in the press box. It's typically like there's kind of like a sullen silence because they just got their asses kicked. That's been the experience the last couple of years, right? You open the doors to the press box. What is the wave of sound that hits you?
Usually, the visiting team's fans doing their chant.
Right, and so it's not that loud, but there's a definite, like, off in the distance, big go big blue, go whatever chant, right? And so, in my mind, like, that association is there. You open the door to silence or the opposing fans razzing Commanders fans. I opened the door yesterday, Michael, to leave the press box to go downstairs, and was just smashed in the face by happy people noises. And I was like, whoa, that can happen here. And it was jarring in the best way. Like, I truly mean this, Michael. Like, I was unprepared to open the press box door and hear people cheering, because I'm just so conditioned that, like, oh, I'm going to walk out, I'm going to go downstairs, I'm going to do my job. And people were so excited after a game, and fans are like beating on the side of the escalator, making noise, hooting, hollering. And so, yeah, it was like, would I say, like, during the game, there was this huge, like, oh my God, overwhelming crowd. Definitely, like, you felt it as Watson and that offense continued to sputter. People were loud when the defense was on the field. People explode on the Diami touchdown. So, like, there, it was definitively a Commanders home crowd, but I wouldn't describe it as, like, raucous, wild, out of control in the way that I think if they go compete against Baltimore and beat a couple other teams later this month, that we're going to be, you know, looking at in terms of a home crowd in November and December if this team's in contention.
Yeah, I can't even imagine what it'd be like if they beat Baltimore, right, and then come home. We all see what the schedule is on the other side of Baltimore. If they find a way to do that, this town's going to go crazy, and rightfully so, right? I mean, I said on my show today, I think this is a playoff football team. I really do. I think you have to expect them to make the playoffs the way they're playing right now. If you beat Baltimore, my goodness, that just goes through the roof. That's absolutely a playoff team at that point. And then, you know, to the happiness you mentioned, like, there's a full lost generation here of people who are not Commanders fans because they grew up in some of the bleakest years of football any city in America has seen, you know, a very bleak stretch. Part of Josh Harris's job is fan acquisition. It's not fan retention. It's fan acquisition. You acquire fans with superstars and fun experiences. Right now, they got both.
No doubt about it. Michael Phillips, 910 The Fan in Richmond with us, of course, on the beat for so many years for the Richmond Times-Dispatch, still covering the games, except for when he decides to fill in for Denton, who actually was at the game on Sunday here on the Team 980. Member of the Odyssey family, of course, you can listen to his show 10 a.m. to noon on the free Odyssey app. Just search 910 The Fan. And Michael, I would actually ask you this question because I was trying to think about this earlier. I was on a podcast today and got asked this. Like, what's the best crowd? Actually, I think I was on AWOD's show and he asked me this. I did a lot of stuff today. Long day, Michael, but we're here. What's the best crowd since 2012 that you can think of at FedEx, now Northwest Stadium?
Yeah, in terms of result, I'd have to dig really deep on that one because it is, right, it's the 2012 game against Dallas to play into the playoffs. That's number one in recent memory. Everybody knows that. You know, and honestly, in terms of hype and buzz, number two is probably the Monday night opener the next season, the All-In for Week 1 game, before the air got fully taken out of the room. That was a juiced-up crowd. You know, they probably the playoff game against the Packers, but that was half Packers fans. I don't know that there's – there were a ton of, you know, there's the play-in game against the Giants where all they needed to do was beat the Giants and make the playoffs. There's a great atmosphere that night. They didn't win. There's a game against the Giants with Heinicke where it felt like they were about to turn the corner. They didn't. I'm remembering a lot of pregame good crowds. I'm not remembering a lot of postgame good crowds. There were big wins, like the Sunday night football win over the Packers was a great win. Do you like that game where you come back from 24 against Tampa? But those crowds weren't lathered up in the way, you know, that a crowd expecting a good thing is.
Right, right. And that's kind of what I was getting at is, like, what are even in contention for what it should be, barring them getting their doors blown off in Baltimore? And again, knock on all the wood that doesn't happen. But, like, what are we looking at in a couple of weeks, potentially? And especially Carolina, that fan base is not going to travel. Chicago, that one could be interesting. But, like, to me, the Packers playoff game for sure. Like, that crowd was juiced up and ready to go, and then it went sideways when Deshaun fumbled down near the end zone. And obviously, there were a lot of Packers fans, but that was a very good Washington crowd that day. There was a Monday night game against Dallas, I think, that year. Maybe it was a couple years later. Maybe it was 2017. Also, a memorable Deshaun Jackson whoopsie, the one where he fumbled the punt late.
yes, it was.
I don't mean to be picking on Deshaun here. It just happened. Those are the two games that kind of come to mind. I do remember, yeah, obviously the winning in Giants game. Like, I remember being like, dang, the crowd was ready and the team was not. But overall, like, I think this is kind of the point, right? So I've been here since 2015, and that's three games that I can think of that I'm like, oh, that was a great home crowd. And so outside of then the Arizona opener last year, the first game of the Josh Harris era, which was from, I wasn't there, but I was told it was pretty good, but like different kind of good. I think we are headed for a legitimate new era here. And it's great that, you know, I think Josh Harris and them were already investing in the stadium. But imagine this is just going to push them, be like, dang, our fans are going to be here. Like, we got to make sure they have a good time. And hopefully it just continues to push everything in the right direction in all the ways that you started to touch on there.
Yeah, and it's going to take all year, right? I mean, they're definitely, you're going to slowly win people back over the course of the year. Winning on Monday night against Cincy was huge because a lot of casual fans saw that and a lot of people who've fallen off the bandwagon saw that. But I think also, and, you know, look, it's a day to be enormously happy, and it's a day to be enormously happy about everything. There are still questions about the defense, but I think that what you saw yesterday was a defense that got better. It has gotten better over the last three games. Certainly Frankie Louvu is on that trajectory, right, where he's gotten better every game. Mikey Sandra still has gotten better every game. And you mentioned, you know, the drafts, and obviously we trust Adam Peters with those. Think about the pile of free agency money they've got to spend this year. That's equally huge. And what games like this do, what, you know, fan bases like this do is they make it easier to get free agents, right? Like, hey, you know, hey, I'm Adam Peters. I have a pile full of money. Come play football for me. Okay, that is a compelling pitch. Like, you're going to get some guys. Hey, I'm Adam Peters. I have a pile full of money. Come play with Jaden Daniels. Like, right. That's an even better pitch.
Right, 100%. Like, the fact that they got him in year one is going to accelerate everything else they wanted to do because guys are going to want to come and play here. I'm glad you mentioned Sanders still. I wanted to talk about a couple of other guys here. You mentioned Luvu as well, but what's your been your impression of Sanders still and how he's been able to adapt to outside corner and what that means for this team moving forward? The Emmanuel Forbes of it all, the Mike Sanders still of it all, the defensive backfield of it all.
Yeah, he's a rookie who started in one position, I think it's fair to say, ended up in another position. That's tough to do as a rookie. He seems to have the intelligence, the football IQ, to pull it off and pull it off well. You know, I don't think anybody's talking about Pro Bowls or anything like that, but what you're talking about is finding a guy who's a piece of the future. And I think once you go outside and succeed, you don't come back inside, generally speaking, as a rule. So I think he's probably there to stay until further notice. And that helps take the pressure off of everybody else because we all saw what a glaring weakness that was. I mean, I think I was on this show a couple weeks ago saying, look, I think Noah Igbinoghene might be the best you've got, and you've just got to make peace with that. I think this is a better solution, Craig.
Yeah, no, well, that's the thing. It's like Noah is actually, at this point in their career, seemingly a better nickel corner than Sanders still is. And so if Sanders still is your best outside corner, not named Benjamin St. Juice, and Igbinoghene is your best inside corner, period, this is a more than workable solution. This would be, based off their current roster, an optimal solution. Imagine that, Michael. Optimal solutions for the Burgundy and Gold.
Incredible. I don't even know what to do with myself, Craig. It's such a happy time. It's incredible. And we've all, like, seen fan bases go through this, and we've all known, you know, people who are in this. And for it to happen here now, it's incredible.
It is. There's a part of me that says, do we then just end the interview here? Like, do we keep talking about good things for Washington, or do we end the interview by going, hey, Cleveland, your situation looks familiar. Thank God it's not us anymore. Which one would you like to do? More good Washington, or would you like to take your pot shots at Cleveland?
Hey, we can knock it out quickly because, I mean, look, these guys talked about getting Deshaun Watson. These guys talked about signing Russell Wilson. When you need a quarterback, you're desperate. We're on the other side now, and everything is better and brighter because of that. But I'd certainly, yeah, I'd open it up to a little running backs talk. You know, I feel like Anthony Lynn isn't getting the love he deserves. Because he's doing a great job with those guys. And, man, Austin Eckler, like, every time he touches the ball, he gets 15 yards, but he can't get more touches because also B-Rob is a beast right now. And also your third-string running back is probably a guy who could start on some NFL teams right now. They got going at that position.
Yeah, for sure. And that's the thing with McNichols. Michael, he hasn't played a snap until this season, until 2021. Like, what? Was he hurt the entire? I don't think he was hurt the entire time. How is that dude not on the field? And I guess it also, if we want to like answer the rhetorical question, it's why running backs aren't getting paid, right? There's Jeremy McNichols out there just waiting to be awesome behind the right line and the right scheme and with the right group of people. And because of that, why would you pay anybody big money when he can come in and average 5.8 a carry and run people over and be an A-plus pass blocker on third down? But also, how the hell was Jeremy McNichols not on someone's roster active on game day since 2021 when he's playing like this?
This is why we love football and love talking football, Craig, right? You can unwind this all day and you say, if he were somewhere else, would he be able to have the success? If you dropped another running back into this system, would he be able to have success, right? The Alfred Morris year here with Mike Shanahan in the zone rushing, and also that year was the year Robert was going crazy, so everybody had to account for him. It's such a team game. And that's what you love about days like yesterday when you demolish the other team like that. It's not just like, wow, Jaden Daniels was good, but everybody else gets better across the board and everybody else feels good about themselves. And, you know, that's the Super Bowl tax, right? You know, Bill Parcells talked about and Bill Walsh and those guys, right? You win the Super Bowl, everybody looks better than they actually are, so everybody ends up leaving because you don't have the salary cap to keep everybody. That's a long ways away, Craig. But that certainly, that effect is what you saw yesterday, where when the team's playing well, everybody looks better than they look individually.
That's true, but also you see what happens in Kansas City, and guys just come in and they all of a sudden are better. Like Juju Smith-Schuster leaves Kansas City, not that effective anywhere else. Eventually Kansas City's like, hey, you want to come back? And he's like, sure, I was good for you. And now he's a big part of what they do, and we'll see obviously what they do tonight. But it's why it's one, Andy Reid's good at putting guys in good positions, and also Patrick Mahomes makes a lot of stuff right. And that is a huge part of the success in this league. You can pay the tax when you have Brady, when you have Mahomes. And, you know, it's very early to say that they've got that in Jaden. But if he keeps playing like this, they sure do. Nevertheless, if he continues to get better. And also, Michael, I don't know how closely you read the game notes, so I will end with trivia for you. Michael, Michael Phillips, man who has covered this football team for a long time. You know, very, very good on the history of the Washington organization. We know the rich history of running the football, the offensive linemen, the running backs that have played for this organization. The Commanders have now rushed for 3 touchdowns in 3 straight games. Michael, when was the last time that happened for Washington?
I don't know the answer. I'll certainly guess Riggo.
The answer, Michael, is never.
I love it. I
never.
Love it.
The franchise with Riggo and the Hogs is setting new rushing marks. Just fantastic.
I love it so much.
Here's one that you might actually know. Do you know how many times in Washington franchise history a quarterback has run for over 100 yards in a game?
Yeah, Dean still hasn't. It's just Robert.
Yep, that is correct. It's just Robert, the Minnesota game. That's the only one. But that very much feels like a yet. But we'll see. We'll see when that yet becomes unyetted, if you will. Michael Phillips, everybody. Listen to him. 10 a.m. to noon, 9:10 The Fan down in Richmond. Thank you as always, sir, and we will talk to you next week.
Catch you next time.
All right, it's Michael and trivia questions and fun facts and all that kind of stuff. Coming up next, we go around the NFL. Anthony, are you ready? You did send in your picks on Friday. Are you ready to see how you/we did and talk about an absolutely bananas day of football?
I'm very excited.
Let's do it. That's next on the Team 980.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. I'm chuckling because Anthony is fully into Thunderstruck right now. By the way, did you see the clip going around from Chris Long's podcast talking about Will Levis?
I don't think I've seen it.
It's real funny. Chris Long is like, Will Levis is a guy who's like a... he didn't say cartoon. He's like a movie quarterback. His entire life is just a highlight reel set to Thunderstruck. This guy lives in Thunderstruck. And if you look at Will Levis, it's pretty funny. Anyway, our lives are not set to Thunderstruck. They are set to this music, though.
Ooh.
Come on. There we go.
There it is.
There it is. Week 5 in the NFL saw football. Thursday night chaos, Sunday morning in London, a rain delay or weather delay of Sunday night football that meant it went deep into Monday morning, and we still have Saints and Chiefs tonight. We talk about it all now as we go around the NFL. Anthony, are you ready?
I was born ready. Let's get it.
Excellent. You and I never got the chance to talk about Thursday night football. Look.
Who did you pick?
I did. You know what? I don't want to talk about that. I think I want to talk about it by the end, though, so it'll be all right. And frankly, like, I talked about it a little bit on the show on Friday because I was pretty salty. The Bucs should have won this game. Like, the amount of absolutely stupid things that had to happen at the end of this game for Atlanta to win. And credit to Atlanta and Kirk, and they did the thing. Like, but again, if Tampa just, like, falls on Drake London with 1 second to go instead of letting... Atlanta scotch-free up to the line of scrimmage to spike the football, then the game never gets to overtime. So, I mean, the Bucs just absolutely screwed themselves out of a win. Good job, you guys. Way to go, Tampa. But, you know, hey, maybe Atlanta's found its offense. Kirk throws for 500 yards, and the Falcons won.
Yeah. Hold on. So did you pick the Bucs?
I'm assuming. I did pick the Bucs.
I hate that for you, Craig. I hate that for you. I picked those Falcons. But I'm not going to lie. What Kirk and them did in the final 12 seconds, that was pretty impressive, bro.
Yeah, it was impressive, but like also it should never happen.
You're right. But the fact that it did is...
If a Tampa defender lays on Drake London 1 second longer, or one of them bumps the referee, oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Official, when he goes in to set the ball, like
they win. He didn't even set it, though, Craig. He literally tapped it.
Yeah.
I thought they actually had to hold the ball, put it down. But apparently, it might have changed this year. It might have changed this year.
I don't know. But, hey, Kirk threw it 58 times.
Yeah, that's...
58 for 509. If you're going to throw 58 times, you should have a lot of yards. Boy, did he. 42 of 58 for 509. And they won.
Yep.
And they won. So there's that. Jets, Vikings. The Aaron Rodgers experiment is not going great for the New York Jets. Obviously, last year went about as bad as you could. Played 4 snaps.
Mm-hmm.
Torn Achilles. This year he comes back. And he wants to. He also would like to throw the ball a lot. Let's just have all our quarterbacks that are 35 and up throw 50 plus times coming off of torn Achilles. That sounds like a formula for success. It worked for the Falcons, didn't work so much for the Jets. Rodgers, 29 of 54, 2 touchdowns, 3 picks, averaged 4.5 yards a completion. Like, you threw 54 times for 54 yards. That's horrendous. Sorry, yards per attempt, not yards per completion.
Yeah, they were talking about, you know, this Aaron Rodgers versus Brian Flores chess match. And it seems to me Brian Flores won.
Sure does. 13 of the 29 Aaron Rodgers completions go to Garrett Wilson. He has 13 for 101. So 13 catches, good. 101, not so good for that, as opposed to like Justin Jefferson, 6 for 92, far more efficient. Although Sauce Gardner did a pretty good job, all things considered. 14 targets, only 6 catches, but he still gets 92 yards, still has a couple of key ones. And obviously, you know, the Vikings did enough to win. And the thing is, like, you know, between Ty Chandler and Aaron Jones and a couple of Darnold keepers and, you know, a couple other guys who get carries, like,
mm-hmm.
Minnesota ran the ball 30 times in this game. New York ran at 14. You just need to be more balanced offensively to get the most out of your passing game. And Rodgers just wants to sit back there and try to be Aaron Rodgers that was MVP. And he's not that dude anymore. He's just flat out not.
Do you think it's Aaron Rodgers that's deciding, all right, let's pass the ball here? Or
yeah, he's in charge of everything. He's in charge. The only reason Nate Hackett is there.
Brees Hall needs to run the ball, man.
Yeah, no kidding. The only reason Nate Hackett is there. My cousin asked me, he texted me the other day, my cousin who's a Jets fan, and he goes, do you think, in your professional opinion, that Robert Saleh needs to get fired? And I said, to be honest, I don't know. I would need to know more about his ability to hire coaches. Was he stuck with Nate Hackett because Rodgers said so? And when it comes to the offense, Aaron Rodgers is in charge? Or did Saleh like sign up for this enthusiastically? Because if he did that, then he needs to go because he's not good at picking offensive coordinators. If this was forced upon him, then he can stay because the defense has all in all been pretty good in his tenure. And if he can then just go hire the next guy that Kyle says deserves to be an offensive coordinator, or the next guy Sean says deserves to be an offensive coordinator, and run a more complimentary system, then Robert Saleh could be a fine head coach for the New York Jets. But like, Rodgers needs to retire and Nate Hackett needs to go for that to happen.
Yeah, it's not looking good, man. Not looking good.
Things are looking better suddenly for the Bears. Playing the Panthers tends to help. Monstrous second quarter for Chicago. They score 20 in it. 36-10 is the final score. Caleb Williams, 300 yards. Nice, efficient, 20 for 29. DJ Moore, big game against his old team. 5 catches, 105, and 2 TDs.
2 TDs. That boy, hey, he looked good, man. He's fine. Granted, it is the Carolina Panthers, but the Carolina Panthers are the same team that got their first dub against. Who do they upset?
Someone. I don't remember.
I forgot who they upset. But, again, everybody was talking about, you know, maybe benching Bryce Young. The Panthers got a little bit more fight in them. Bears went out there and completely derailed everything they had going on. The Bears defense also looks the part. We had a lot of expectations for those guys.
Flus and that crew, since last year, 10 of their last 11, they've held opponents under 21.
Man, looking good.
Looking good. By the way, later this month, they'll have one of their biggest tests in that stretch because they'll face Jaden Daniels and the Commanders. Ravens, 41, Bengals, 38. This one, yikes, bro, for the Bengals in overtime. They get the ball after Lamar fumbles a snap. By the way, Lamar in this game was ridiculous as a passer. This is going to be fun tape to go back and watch and prep for Washington this week, because I think Cincinnati did what you want to do. You want to force them to become one-dimensional and make Lamar beat you from the pocket, and Lamar threw for 348, four touchdowns and no picks on 26 of 42. Like, if he's going to do that, you're just probably going to give up a bleep ton of points. But until the 51-yarder that he had at the end, let me do this math real quick. Hold on. Derrick Henry, going into his final carry, had 14 carries for 41 yards. And then he ran for 51 and set up the game winner. So Henry, 15 for 92, a little bit misleading, because when the Bengals recovered a Lamar Jackson fumbled snap in overtime, all they had to do was like get a first down and have a 40-yard field goal. Instead, they just run the ball three times, set up a 50-plus yarder, and their reward by the football gods of being non-aggressive was a bad hold, and Evan McPherson, who's really good as a kicker, never had a chance, swings it wide left. Henry for 51, Justin Tucker for the win. And instead of two teams sitting at 2-3 and a lot of questions, you have the Ravens at 3-2, perfectly fine considering how bad the AFC is top to bottom from the wild card standpoint. And the Bengals at 1-4, frankly, aren't even that far out of it.
Man, the Ravens have had some close calls all season, man. But I'm excited they were able to, you know, go out there, pull it out. Derrick Henry, him only having 41 yards before the – was that OT he had the 51-yarder?
Yeah.
What? I would have never have had that on my bingo card.
Nope.
But again, you know, that's
But Luana Romo was like, you are not going to run on us. And I kind of think that's what Joe Witt's got to do this week. Make Lamar be MVP passing Lamar 2 weeks in a row. I would much rather that than Derrick Henry go for 200.
Yeah. I can't wait to get into the preview of this game because I have so many questions.
I do as well. Dolphins 15, Patriots 10. Tyler Huntley playing quarterback is better than Skylar Thompson and whoever else they had playing, I guess. But they only score 15 points, but the Patriots are an absolute nightmare offensively. Jacoby Brissett, by the way, on the last play of this game, throws the ball like over the middle to Hunter Henry to like the 10-yard line. They have no timeouts, and there's like 10 seconds left and the ball is snapped. Like, what are you doing? Generally speaking, he's running for his life. I feel a little bit bad for Jacoby, but he knew what he was signed up for. But yeah, Dolphins 15, Patriots 10. All right. I think I got that one wrong, actually, in the picks. Yep. By the way, how are we doing so far?
We're tied right now. We're both 3-2.
Okay. So there's that. This one. Did I zig on this one? Did I pick Jacksonville at home?
Yeah, you did. And I should have gone with you, Craig. The Colts have not won in Jackson. I really think it's a curse. It has to be. Since 2011, they have not won in Jacksonville.
An absolutely crazy fourth quarter. A 24-17 fourth quarter. Luckily for the Jags, they had scored 20 going into it, and the Colts had only scored 10. So 37-34, the final. Trevor Lawrence, 28 for 34, 371. What happened that the Jags just gave up? I mean, the Colts gave up so many big plays to this Jags team because that's all they try for. Like, you have to know, we have to make Trevor beat us dink and dunk. They're not going to run the football a ton. Although, you know, I guess they let up a couple of big ones because Bigsby had 13 carries for 101. That'll ruin your day.
Yep.
Like, what's going on with this defense?
So on the Bigsby, 75, I think he had a 75-yard
65.
TD. 65. There it is. 65-yard. People missing tackles in the holes. And then Brian Thomas, he had like a 70-yard bomb because they're in cover three, and I don't know what the corner on the outside is doing. You can't let a guy wheel up the field and you not see the guy. I couldn't believe it.
It's not like Brian Thomas is a small man. It is a big man, runs fast. He hit over 22 miles an hour on that catch. It was an 85-yarder.
Yeah, he's gone.
22 miles per hour, the fastest ball carrier of the season, I do believe, per next-gen stats, unless someone beat it in the afternoon window yesterday. It was when it happened. He has a buck 22. Kirk's got 88, as in mm-hmm. Christian Kirk. Tank Bigsby, 13 carries, 101, of course, inflated by that 65-yarder. Flacco, by the way, 33 of 44, 359 and three touchdowns. But Shane Steichen said today that when Anthony Richardson is back, he will be the starting quarterback in Indianapolis. So something to watch there. Yep. But the Jags, 37-34 winners at home. Game of the day in terms of contenders, etc. Bills-Texans turned into a kind of wacky game where C.J. Stroud has arguably his best performance of the season. 28 for 38, 331 and a touchdown for Stroud. Meanwhile, also had a pick. Meanwhile, Josh Allen, easily his worst performance, not only of the season, but arguably of his career. I mean, I guess the Baltimore game was also pretty bad. But 9 of 30? 9 of 30? Oh, 9 of 30, 131 and a touchdown, no picks. Doesn't really have a... I mean, he's got 4 for 54, including a 19-yarder on the ground. So, like, Allen was productive in that way, but the Bills just could not really put it together. And then, obviously, the big talking point in this one is late in this game, Buffalo, if they just run the football, this thing goes to overtime. Instead, they take a bunch of dumb shots and wind up punting the ball back to Houston, and then Kymie Fairbairn comes in and kicks a 58-yarder for the win because the Texans barely have to move the ball because of how bad the field position was for Buffalo. Just an absolutely ridiculous job by Sean McDermott managing this game late. This is the kind of thing that if the Buffalo season tanks, Ant, people are going to look back at this game and be like, we can't trust you to be a head coach, and that's the kind of stuff as a head coach that gets you fired. You can't do that stuff.
Yeah, I didn't understand. I didn't think they would be able to, you know, get down the field on the 1 yard line with 30 seconds left to go. Yeah, you have a couple of timeouts, but you got a ways to go.
If you want to take one shot, fine. Taking three? Multiple shots?
Yeah, three was insane.
What are you doing?
Yeah. They had 16 seconds when the Texans got the ball back. So if you're getting the ball, you only got to get maybe like 8 yards to get in the kicker's field goal range. Man.
Not good.
Not good.
Not good. I think I missed that one. I think I had Buffalo.
Yeah, you had Buffalo. I had Houston.
Dang. I think I missed this one too. Broncos, Raiders?
Nah, you got this.
No, I got this one. Okay. 34-18. The Broncos. Did I do something dumb on Competition Wednesday with this game, maybe? I don't know. Maybe the Raiders vibes are so bad that I picked them for some stupid reason. Maybe that was last week and I'm still scarred. The point is the Broncos defensively have been really, really good, but their offense got going in this one as well. But they actually got some points from their defense, including a 100-yard pick six from Pat Surtain. Bo Nix, two touchdowns to supplement as well. Just a nice, tidy day, 19-27, 206 for Nix. And the thing is, this defense is good enough, Anthony, that if they can just not turn the football over, like, they'll compete in some games. Run it, you know, Sean Payton's gonna figure some things out. Raiders, they got nothing figured out, dude. They got two quarterbacks that each split time in this game, 12 of 17 for Minshew, 10 of 20 for O'Connell. They've each threw picks. Like, the Raiders are a mess, and it sucks because, you know, Antonio Pierce did a good job as an interim last year, and you're kind of going like, hey, if you did this good of a job, we kind of got to give you the job.
Mm-hmm.
And time and time again, like, you just got to, like, when will organizations learn to not hire the interim guy? Don't do that. Go through a process. If he turns out to be your best guy, great. But, man, if you're... This is a little funky, unexpected thing for me to say here because I'm going to bring the WNBA into it. But, like, if you're Mark Davis and you've hired Becky Hammon to coach your basketball team, because those are the two teams that the owner of the Raiders owns. He owns the Las Vegas Aces and he owns the Las Vegas Raiders. And he's got Becky Hammon, one of the best coaches in the sport, on the basketball side. How do you then look at that and go, I know what I need to do. No interviews, no nothing. Antonio Pierce is my guy. And I guess they were at the risk of like a locker room mutiny, but I kind of think guys would have gotten over it. I hate that they didn't go through a process. Not that they necessarily hired or what that they wouldn't have hired Pierce, but like you didn't go through a process. You just hired the guy who was a good interim coach and was the right guy to be the counter to what Josh McDaniels was. Wacky year, and that's even before you get to the Davante Adams stuff.
Yeah, I was about to say you didn't even mention Davante. I don't know, the Raiders are giving bad news bears like all over again, and it's going to be a long season. We're only in week 5. And the Raiders are talking about they want to have, you know, a resolution for the Davante situation like in the next 48 hours. So I don't know.
Which other teams don't necessarily want to because they don't know about his hamstrings. Are the Raiders going to take an under market deal because teams are going to be like, I don't know about that hamstring.
Uh-huh.
Maybe. I don't know. We'll see. Cardinals 24, 49ers 23. Didn't see this one coming. Big fourth quarter, 11-0 for Arizona. Jordan Mason held under 100. He's been so good for San Francisco, but big game for Brandon Ayuk. Doesn't matter. Brock Purdy, 19 for 35, 244, and a touchdown. But two picks. Kyler only throws for 195, but does have a touchdown, and he runs for another 83 yards, including a 50-yarder and a touchdown. James Conner, 19 for 86. Man, like, I didn't get to watch much of this game because obviously I was doing post-game stuff for Washington, but when I saw this score, I was like, I'm sorry, the who beat the who? After San Francisco looked to be back on track after just housing New England, and Arizona got their doors beat off by Washington, but, I mean, good job by the Cardinals to bounce back, and I think it's proof of, like, what Washington did to Arizona was really impressive. This is an Arizona team that crushed the Rams and has now beaten the 49ers for their two wins, and Washington smashed them.
Yeah, I think when we were talking about, you know, San Fran early in the year, or, you know, just through their first couple of games, I had mentioned, you know, their defense not being the defense that a lot of people fear. And I think a lot of it has to do with their front. Yes, they are banged up, but they also just don't have the names that we're accustomed to seeing. I haven't heard too much about Nick Bosa all year. So, again, I think the defense has to step forward. Jordan Mason fumbling, though, on their side of the 50 did hurt because the Cardinals got the ball back, marched down the field, scored. So I think that hurt them a lot. But I don't know, San Fran, they got a lot to figure out. What are they, 2-3 now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They got to get dudes healthy. They got to get that defense playing right.
I mean, dudes is more so just McCaffrey. I mean,
it's McCaffrey, but defensively they don't have their guys, and they got to figure out see if they can get some of those guys back, and then ultimately what they do with it. Packers hold on to beat the Rams. Stafford driving late, but it comes up short. 29 for 45, 260 and a touchdown for Stafford in the loss as Jordan Love and company ride a big third quarter to a 24-19 win. Love 15 of 26, two touchdowns and a pick as he continues to work his way back. Josh Jacobs. I give Matt LaFleur a lot of credit. 19 carries, 73. That's not a good average, but and it's not like he had any big ones either. He was just kind of kept plucking away, but it keeps the offense on schedule. They did what they needed to do. Jaden Reed gets a couple of carries on bigger plays. They found ways to move the football, and Tucker Kraft emerging as a good tight end. And lo and behold, the Packers do what they're supposed to do. They go to L.A. and they get a win, and then they'll come back home and have another game this week and a chance to keep pace with the Vikings, but really solidify themselves as the prime contender for a wild card spot in the NFC.
You see Xavier McKinney, fifth straight game with an interception. He's cooking defensively for them. And I think that's a part of their team that doesn't get spoken about enough. And they're missing Jair. So I think when they get him back, that defense, that back end, is definitely going to be able to keep those guys into some games.
Giants and Seahawks. What?
Yeah.
What?
Yep,
what?
Happened. Yep.
29-20. The Giants win decisively in Seattle. The Seahawks are good. The Giants are not. What happened here, Anthony? What happened, you ask? The schedule.
Mm.
Yeah. The Seahawks, who, by the way, will play a third game in 10 calendar days, this Thursday, as they play the Niners on Thursday Night Football, they went from Monday night back home, Giants coming off Thursday night, so they had a +4 rest day advantage, and they looked like the much fresher team. They seal it with a blocked field goal, so the margin winds up being even wider. I don't think that particularly mattered, unless that perhaps pushed it to the over, but clearly the Giants were not favored in this game. And they went out and won. 29-20, Geno, 284, a touchdown. And I think the biggest thing from this game from a New York standpoint, Tyrone Tracy, the best back they've had all year, best performance by a back, 18 carries for a 129.
Yeah, he was going federal. He had a couple of big runs, 25 yards, 27 runs. I'm like, good gracious. And this is, you know, in the absence of Devin Singletary. But I'm so surprised that the Giants were able to move the ball on offense. Here, Malik Neighbors is going to be there. Who are they throwing to, Craig? But I guess if Tyrone
Darius
Tracy,
Slayton, 8 catches, 122 and a touchdown.
Yep, he had himself a day, too. But outside of that, it's just like, I mean, we praise Seattle for their defensive backs. So we already know, yes, they have Darius Slayton, but who else? Who else? They just made the plays that they needed to make.
You know, Wandale Robinson's catching a lot of balls, not going very far with them, but like if you keep the offense on schedule, good things can happen. Daniel Jones picks up a couple first down with his legs, and lo and behold, there you are. You know, Jones has 11 carries in this game, so they do enough. Wandale Robinson, by the way, 6 catches on 9 targets for 36 yards.
Nice.
Went nowhere fast. Last but not least, Cowboys and Steelers, Sunday Night Football. Cowboys 20, Steelers 17, as they get the late touchdown by Dak Prescott in the fourth quarter. Man, Prescott 29 of 42, 352 and 2 touchdowns, and a huge fumble recovery as Rico Dowdle went in for what would have been a game-winning touchdown. Steelers linebacker jumps over the pile, knocks the ball out. Prescott able to recover it and then throw a touchdown on fourth down as time is nearly expiring. Jalen Tolbert, the game winner. CeeDee Lamb, you know, kept in more check. 5 catches, 62. But Steelers offensively just couldn't get anything major going. 15 of 27, 131. For Justin Fields, 2 touchdowns, and then ran for another 27. I wonder if this kind of performance opens up the window for Russell Wilson to play in Pittsburgh. I think it's going to be an interesting week in Mike Tomlin press conference land.
Yeah, it'll probably be interesting. I still think Fields did just enough to get the dub yesterday. The Cowboys converting that fourth and goal. Pretty impressive execution by those guys. Tolbert with the strong grab. But I think the Steelers' identity is going to be their defense. They get that stop there, they win that game. Shout out to, I don't know.
Here's the thing, like how many times have we seen that exact situation and T.J. Watt gets a sack?
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, how many times they could have to wind up in that situation when they're up 17-13? Like, what more do you want from your defense? I mean, I guess you want one more stop, but
please,
you know, against an offense as potent as Dallas, like, hey, let's get maybe a few more on the board. And if you score just 24 points, you win the football game. And that's it's not a big deal. But Cowboys get the win 22-17. They're 3-2, as is Pittsburgh. We will talk about all these teams in our NFL tier rankings tomorrow or Wednesday, whenever we get to them this week. And coming up next, we'll get back to the Commanders and the Browns. We had a pretty good list of our pick six on Friday, and I know you weren't here for it, but so I think you'll be excited to uncover the five or the six players that we talked about in our pick six and just see how they did, because they definitely were keys to the game. Much more breakdown of Commanders and Browns next on the Team 980.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.